Luke 24 from verse 13. Now, that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking to each other about everything that had happened. And as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you only a visitor to Jerusalem, and do you not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it's the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us they'd seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see." He said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he were going further, but they urged him strongly, "No, stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread and gave thanks, broke it and began to give it to them. And then their eyes were opened. They recognized him and disappeared. And he disappeared from their sight. And they asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" And so they got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. Short meditation this evening was kind of wrote itself, really, over a couple of weeks. One of them, when I was at the National Prayer Breakfast for Wales, a wonderful event I try to get to, if not every year, then every other year. And this year the speaker was a South Walian evangelist, a lady evangelist, told us a story about a church planting in Newport Docks. So I thought you just might like to see a picture of Newport Docks on the screen while I talk. There it is in all its glory. She was telling us it's a very deprived area. There are 92 different languages spoken in Newport Docks in that area. It's where the poorer people live. It's where the immigrants live. And she was telling the story of a couple of a family of East European immigrants who were living next door to a Christian couple and heard the word and got interested in the Christian faith, then moved to a block of flats in Newport Docks. And a church began in that block of flats. Now, I don't know what you think about this church. Tell me what you think about this church. It's how it began. It began in the home of a heroin addict. The keyboard player was a wonderful keyboard player, but also another heroin addict. The translator, because having to translate into Eastern European language, she was a prostitute and also a heroin addict. And the church began in that house of heroin addicts in a flat there. I don't know which block of flats. No idea. It was there somewhere in Newport Docks. How about that for a church? Didn't stay that way. Didn't stay that way. Jesus began to turn up and change lives. Lives didn't remain that messed up. But there in Newport Docks, the risen Jesus appeared to some of the poorest people in our land, in the worst conditions. And somewhere in that area, there are a group of Christians who are today have met, and Jesus has stood among them in all their problems. Can you imagine being pastor of that church? Where do you start? That's how it began. And that's what God is doing in our nation, in surprising ways, in surprising places. Jesus is turning up and talking to people. Thank you, Roshni. Jesus is risen from the dead. As I was preparing this, you see, I went back to verse 13, and these guys are walking back from Emmaus, and they don't know that Jesus has risen from the dead. They've heard rumours, but they don't know. Most of Jerusalem thinks that Jesus is history. The Pharisees and the Sadducees are all congratulating themselves. Herod's forgotten it. Pilate's moving on to his next crisis. And the Roman soldiers are just content to get through another Passover without a big blow-up, a big riot. And Jesus is history. Jesus was, in their opinion. They don't know that he's alive. They don't know what's happened. And I was struck by this tension between those who know and those who don't. The few who know and the majority who don't. And if only the few can persuade the majority, then history is going to change. But at this point, you're wondering, are they going to believe? Are they going to hear? Are they going to find out that Jesus is alive? And you don't want to turn up at the Pharisee's door and say, stop smiling. Stop smiling. Take that smirk of satisfaction off your face. You've lost. He's alive. The crowds are still shaken by the darkness and the earthquake. And you want to knock on those doors of the houses in Jerusalem and say, guys, cheer up. It wasn't the end of Jesus. That day of darkness, that Friday that was horrendous, perhaps certainly the worst day in the history of Jerusalem, the worst day in the history of the world, was also its greatest. Because he's come back, he's alive. The Roman soldiers are getting drunk in their barracks celebrating the end of the Passover. You want to knock on the door and say, guys, one day the Roman emperor is going to bow the knee to this Jesus. So take that smile off your faces. One day you too are going to find out that Jesus is alive. The followers of Jesus are in total disarray. The whole reaction to the day is wrong. The whole reaction to the day is wrong. It's working on false presumptions. He's alive and they don't know it. They're saying you don't know what the situation is. It's all wrong. This is a great big phase, aren't we, of a film about the Titanic. You know? What is it about that ship that everyone wants to make a film about it? One film's not enough. You've got to have two films. Then you've got to have a TV drama. Then you've got to have documentaries. Then you've got to have another drama. And what is it about that film? What is it that makes it so engaging? Is this the ship sinks? That's the whole point, isn't it? We know that the ship sinks. So we understand and we perceive that those guys, that their reaction is all wrong. All that gaiety, all that frivolity is not founded on reality. The strutting superiority of the owners of the ship and the captain, and have to say to them, guys, you've got it wrong. You do not understand the situation. This thing is doomed. It's going down. It sinks. And that's what makes the story so engaging. And what made this story engaging to me was it's the other way around. He rises. He's going to come back. Now, all your reaction to what happened on Friday has been wrong. The whole city has got it wrong. The whole world has got it wrong. He is coming back to life. And then the second thing that caught me is only some people know. Isn't that a terrible pity? What a shame, what a pity. Only some people know. And I got this burning desire in my heart that everyone should know that he's risen from the dead. And about the same time, I was at a minister's conference, and Phil Jump, our regional minister, was then. He was just talking to the ministers. He threw a picture on the screen of the great classic pictures. And you might just have... could you just have the lights off? This is Diego Velázquez. Now, I don't know how you pronounce it in Spanish. Now, if it were Portuguese, I know how to pronounce it. This is a famous painting, 1618. Kitchen made with the supper at Emmaus. And I was just stunned by this picture. If you're listening to the sermon on the internet, you need to Google Diego Velázquez, kitchen made with the supper at Emmaus, kitchen made with the supper at Emmaus, and you'll find it on the internet. And can you just see what's going on? It's a brilliant picture. The more I looked at it, the more it moved me. Your focus is firstly on the maid, but there's something happening in the background. Can you all see what's happening in the background through the serving hatch? Let's have some feedback here, guys.
She's listening to what's going on.
Yeah, what's happening in the background? What's happening through the other side of the serving hatch?
Jesus is revealing himself.
Some people are having supper.
Some people are having supper. And can you...
No,
it's Emmaus. It's a scene from the Bible we're talking about. Can you just see that Velázquez has just kind of given a sort of little halo around the head of Jesus? Jesus... what's Jesus doing? If you think back to the Bible story, what's Jesus doing at this point? He's breaking bread. And what happens at that point in the story? They recognize him. They suddenly realize this is Cleopas, perhaps, or his friend. And he's, the light's dawning on him. Can you see the way Velázquez has just tilted the man's face up and there's a light shining on his face? The truth is dawning on him. There's knowledge happening here. This is Jesus. This is Jesus. And for a moment, your eye is fascinated by that. And then... you move back to the maid. So tell me, what's your reaction to the maid? What's happening with the maid?
She's been listening.
She's been turning around to see.
Is she? What's she been doing? Or is she? Or is she not? What's in front of her?
The dishes that she's been cleaning.
She's been cleaning the dishes while they've been having supper with Jesus. She's in the kitchen cleaning the dishes, washing the dishes. How's she feeling? How's she feeling? He's painted the way this woman is feeling.
She does.
She does. There's an uncertainty there. How's she feeling physically?
Tired.
Look at the way she's just holding herself on the table. She's worn out. Okay? She's worn out. The master of the house, he's sitting with Jesus. And just discovered that Jesus... But she's there. She's worn out. She's tired. She's listening. Does she get it? Is she going to discover that Jesus is alive or not?
That's the question,
isn't it? He's left. Can you see the way he's left it open? Does she find out? Is she going to be the one who finds out that Jesus is alive? Fantastic. It's interesting that at the time Velázquez painted this, there was discussion about whether slavery was legal or not.
It's a rescue picture.
It could be. You're right. It could well be, Rosalind. It could well be that. She's African. And the suggestion that she might well be a slave. But she's there when Jesus is alive. And he's making a political point. He's making a moral point. Making a religious point. This woman needs to hear about Jesus. Africans need to hear about Jesus. Is she going to hear? Who's going to tell her? How is she going to find out? It's left in the balance. Isn't that fantastic? She's heard it, but does she get the message? We don't know. It's wonderful. Thank you. So that kind of got hold of me. Do people know about Jesus? How do they find out about Jesus? And then in verse 33 to 34, they got returned at once to Jerusalem. The guys here, whether they stop and tell Velike's maid on the way, we don't know. They get to Jerusalem. And the good news is spread. And a number of things happened. I was at National Prayer Breakfast, sitting at the table with two South Korean missionary young people. They're taking a year out to evangelize Wales. That they're working in South Wales, based out of Llanelli, I believe. So I said, why are you here? Why have you come from South Wales? From South Korea to South Wales? And I wasn't surprised at the story, because I've heard this before. They said, oh, we're here because the first missionary, martyr in South Korea, was Welsh. And we've come to his birthplace to visit him, to pay back what we owe Wales. We have, working with us in a Baptist denomination, Peter Cho, South Korean. And he's so moved by the fact that a Welshman gave his life for the South Korean people. He has moved to South Wales to pastor a church, to work with the Baptists of Wales and to pastor a church. It's common. So here's a PowerPoint. And this is, don't know if you know the story, but let's have that PowerPoint up. Jermaine Thomas, here he was, born in Chreada. His father was a Welsh Baptist minister, Welsh-speaking Baptist minister, in Capel Llanova, in Monmouthshire. And that little chapel has pilgrimages from South Koreans. They come over every year in their droves to visit that little chapel in South Wales. Thomas was called by God to be a missionary. And he went out and he visited South Korea in 1865. He was the second known Protestant missionary to Korea. There was a German Protestant missionary, beat him to it about 30 years before. Thomas learned as much as he could of the language, but had to withdraw. He went back. And then it kind of all went wrong. He went back on an American trading ship as an interpreter for the crew. It was an armed trading ship. And as it sailed up, he threw out bales of Bibles in Korean language onto the sandbanks, just throwing out tracts and Bibles as they sailed up the river. It was illegal to trade, so there was a conflict with the Korean government, and the Americans reacted, and there was a standoff and a fight. In the end, the Korean Navy attacked the ship, and Jermaine Thomas was killed. That was in 1866. The stories that come from it, there was a local Korean who had used Chinese Bible pages, one of the Bibles Thomas distributed, to wallpaper his house. And it was discovered by the local Christian community in the early 1900s, and people came from all over the world to read the words on his wall and eventually a church was established in the area. From all over, they come. The Koreans come to honour. You probably never even heard of Jermaine Thomas before tonight. But Pastor Sydney, as I was saying, small nations can change the world. And I just came across this video on the internet. You just have got to watch this. This is Korean children singing Welsh hymns in Hanover Chapel. Little children come from Korea to Wales to honour the memory of Jermaine Thomas. Pastor Cho said to me, Peter, he's talked to me, he said, look, in the last decade, 3 million North Koreans died of hunger. 3 million North Koreans died of hunger. That's the same as the population of Wales, nearly. And yet, here I am, because God has called me to Wales. Tremendous. At the same prayer breakfast, I was talking to somebody else who said that in Mizoram, they call Wales its mother church. Large church in Mizoram also calls Wales its mother church because the missionary that planted that church came from Wales. And it all came together in my mind, that maid, is she going to hear, is she not? We don't know. But we do know that where the word has gone out, the churches have been planted, God has used people to tell the news that Jesus is alive. Fantastic. It's hope, Pastor Sydney, hope for us small nations, because we can change the world and change nations.